Just past 7:08 in the morning, you're listening to Upfront. I'm Brian Edwards-Tiekert.
And I'm Antonia Yuhas. Yesterday in the White House, President Trump announced the signing of a preliminary agreement to renegotiate NAFTA with Mexico. The deal was signed with outgoing President of Mexico, Peña Nieto, and with current President of the United States, Donald Trump. In the photograph that accompanies the announcement, we have Donald Trump flanked by Jared Kushner. We have the U.S. Trade Representative, Robert Lighthizer. We have Michael Pence, and we have John Bolton. That lineup of folks might lead some people to have some concerns about what this preliminary agreement might include. The agreement also doesn't include one of the key partners, Canada. To go through all these details with us and help us understand what's there, what isn't, and what needs to be, we are joined by Lori Wallach, Director and Founder of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. Thanks for joining us, Lori.
Thank you.
And also,
good morning.
And also Laura Carlson. She's Director of the Americas Program of the Center for International Policy. Thanks for being with us, Laura. All right, we're going to keep working on Laura. Laura, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you for being with us as well. Lori, Right. We are going to start with you. Can you tell us what happened yesterday?
Well, there was an announcement on a preliminary deal in the NAFTA renegotiations that started a year ago. This is a deal with the U.S. and Mexico. Canada has been largely sitting out the process since May. In May, Canada basically said it just simply refused to engage on one particular provision that the U.S. insisted on, which is a sunset. It's a provision that instead of having the agreement go on forever, like the current NAFTA does or the TPP does, would set a specific term and require the countries to reauthorize it. Canada just found that totally objectionable. The U.S. and Mexico kept talking, and while they have made some big progress on some longstanding progressive demands, they have whacked the investor-state dispute settlement part of the corporate tribunals out of the agreement, and they have gotten rid of the outrageous natural resources mandatory corporate access rules that Canada hated especially, that guaranteed rights to water, oil, gas, timber for multinational companies in the NAFTA countries. They put in a rather stunning $16 an hour minimum wage for a certain portion of automobiles made under NAFTA, and they put in some very strong labor standards, but the labor standards part still does not have proper enforcement. It's pretty important stuff, but it doesn't matter if it's not enforceable. Plus, who knows what other things may be lurking in there we don't know about that could be a problem. There's some worrisome things in access to medicines and intellectual property rules. But also, it's a work in progress because Canada's not there and NAFTA is a three-country agreement. So there is a question about whether Canada will agree to the things that the U.S. and Mexico agreed to. And all of this is going to come to a head by Friday because that's the deadline for notice to Congress under fast track on a deal.
So the time pressure was, and this was a process that Trump began a year ago, saying that he wanted to either trash NAFTA or renegotiate NAFTA. And there is a deadline, which is by Friday, something has to be introduced to the U.S. Congress, to the Mexican, in the Mexican government. What's the Friday deadline?
So by Friday, notice has to be conveyed to Congress of what is called intent to enter into and sign the agreement. And it's a 90-day notice requirement under the fast-track trade procedures. And that the urgency about that is that the administration spent a year negotiating an agreement and now has this deal with the Mexican government that transitions out on December 1st. So the deadline is basically the last day that the Mexican government that has agreed to these terms can sign the agreement is November 30th, which makes this Friday the 90 days ahead of when the notice has to happen to be able to sign the agreement with the government that's negotiated the agreement before the new Mexican government comes in. Now, the new incoming Mexican government, the AMLO, the populist government, has been at the table, basically over the shoulder of the outgoing government, approving everything for the last couple of months. But it is a very different piece of politics if AMLO himself is supposed to be the person signing the deal versus the guy who can live with what the other president's signing. So that's the sort of sense of urgency.
Well, that's what I'm wondering is who's been at the table over this over the last year? Because like I said, this photograph of the announcement, Kushner, Bolton, Pence, Trump, you know, that's a worrisome lineup of men to be the ones featured as, you know, who we need to understand is behind this agreement from the Trump side. You know, have you been at the table? Has labor, have environmental groups, have immigrant human rights groups, you know, all those both in Mexico and in the United States, or has this been a closed door process and you're basically seeing a window into it now?
So I would recommend at this point everyone put down their hot coffee mugs just so no one spills, because this is going to be a shocker. Everyone's going to either spit out coffee or dump their coffee. But the reality is, and it's not what you'd expect, and it's heartbreaking, but actually with respect to, say, labor or a group like Public Citizen, we've had a lot bigger say on these negotiations than, for instance, we did on the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And as a result, some of those things I've mentioned, the ISDS, you know, being the ISDS chapter being undone, the Business Roundtable is on the warpath today, the Wall Street Journal editorial page is on the warpath about that today.
We need to translate, Lori. That's the investor state dispute system. It's what lets companies sue to overturn regulations. Is that right?
Yes, exactly. I'm sorry. That's what I was talking about, is those tribunals I was talking about where corporations can attack our environmental and health laws. $492 million have been paid out in the first 25 years of NAFTA in corporate attacks on land use, environmental, timber, water, toxic ban policies, court rulings, or energy policies, and the system empowers multinational corporations to skirt domestic courts and sue governments in front of tribunals of three corporate attorneys who are allowed to order governments, taxpayers, to pay unlimited damages to the corporations over claims that the corporation's special NAFTA rights to be free of regulation, et cetera, have been violated. And it's been one of the worst parts of NAFTA for sure. And that that provision coming out is something that the corporate lobby is very upset about. But the reason why, for instance, that change is in the deal, or there's been a big push on the wage levels and the labor standards, is because the guy who's the trade representative is someone who actually, despite the whole rogues gallery you just described, which makes my blood run cold, the one guy in there, Robert Lighthizer, the trade representative, who is one of the guys in that picture, he's a guy who, since the original NAFTA, has opposed the investor state dispute settlement system, has thought the Buy Local, Buy America ban was a bad idea, has thought we needed labor standards to stop the race to the bottom. He's kind of an iconoclastic guy, and he happens to be friends with a lot of unions and with a lot of Democrats in Congress, because most Republicans do not agree with him. And with this U.S.-Mexico deal, you can see quite a bit of his handiwork. Now, it's not done until it's done. So could the rest of that rogues gallery end up pushing back on what he's achieved? Could the final deal not measure up? Well, we know already the enforcement doesn't measure up. Who knows what other things might be in there? But I do think it's really important for progressives, as much as we have a very well-founded instinctive revulsion for almost anything this administration might say or do, it is worth actually waiting to see what the actual text has. Because the things we know that are in this meta deal with the U.S. and Mexico a bunch of them, again, big caveat, if the labor enforcement comes through, could actually help stop what is very severe ongoing damage that NAFTA is causing every week. More jobs are being outsourced because people in Mexico haven't the right to have independent unions or contracts.
Well, let me...
In this agreement is an annex that would actually require those Mexican protection unions be disbanded and that there be actual secret ballot votes by the workers on unions and contracts. And all those old protection fake contracts would have to be replaced within a set time period. So if that ever got enforced, that would be a transformational change. If the ISDS new cases could not be filed, that would be a transformational change.
Well, let me bring in at this point, that's Lori Wallach, thank you, director and founder of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. With that mention of Mexico, let me bring in Laura Carlson, director of the Americas Program of the Center for International Policy. Laura, what can you tell us about the view from Mexico on this? We've got President Nieto negotiating an agreement, which President Obrador would apparently need to okay. You know, how is this looking from Mexico?
Generally speaking, there's been a sigh of relief here in Mexico. What people in Mexico wanted, and particularly the Peña Nieto government, is to just get it over with. The problem for Mexico is that this whole renegotiation and the constant threats of the United States pulling out caused a great deal of instability, particularly in the currency as well as in the financial markets. And so the Mexican government under Peña Nieto, which is not known to be a strong and is certainly not a popular government, basically went the route of having an agenda within NAFTA renegotiations of survival and just making sure that the deal went through. Right now, you got to talk about the politics of it a little bit. There's a lot of spin, but there's still a long way to go, and there's still a lot of questions. Basically, we have, you know, a Trump press conference in which he just bragged about himself and having reached the deal of the century and the kinds of things that we're used to hearing, and three fact sheets from the USTR that have some information, but they also leave out a lot of gaps. There's still some things that have to be settled within US-Mexico, and then, as Lori mentioned, there's still the whole Canada question. At the beginning, Mexico said they wouldn't go anywhere without Canada, and then they even backed down on that. So what they're calling for as their successes is an end to the sunset clause, which is always a throwaway ask. It was ridiculous. Everyone knew it was ridiculous. They were never really going to insist on it, but they've given this face-saving point to the Mexican government to say, oh, we got rid of the sunset clause.
Which is what?
The sunset clause was what we were mentioning before, that after 5 years there'd be a review, and if there were problems in the agreement, the United States would terminate it instantly. Which, you know, for again, it was a factor of instability and one of the things that both Mexico and Canada disagreed with. And then they also called for, they were asking for a ban on the export from Mexico of fruits and vegetables that were in season in the United States. And they managed to get rid of that as well, which was kind of interesting. I mean, was kind of important to Mexico. But there was no lifting of the steel and aluminum tariffs. The labor part's interesting because there are some potentially very good things for Mexico there. The right to collective bargaining, raising wages, it's something that Mexicans, of course, have been asking for years, and it jibes with the new government's, the incoming government's agenda as well. The problem is lack of enforcement, but there's a bigger problem as well. There's a problem that perhaps the Trump administration has not thought this through in the sense that there's a possibility, and business organizations are fearing that instead of sending jobs back to the United States, which is the aim of the Trump administration, something that would not be particularly beneficial to Mexico, but at least if they were able to raise the lower bar on salaries and basic rights, that would be. But there's a possibility that it could be pushed out of the region. So I think people are watching that very closely as well. So in general, a sigh of relief here. They want to get it over with, but there's a long process. López Obrador, the incoming president, is also is also saying that they're pleased with this agreement, and in particular the fact that oil and gas was not included apparently, and he's saying that this is a point in which Mexico has been able to save its national sovereignty.
I know we only have about a minute left of Lori's time, so we'll I'm going to get a last word from Lori and then return back to you. That was Laura Carlson, Director of the Americas Program of the Center for International Policy. Lori Wallach, Director and Founder of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. I know we've only got about a minute left of your time. Can you give us your bottom line on where things stand now, how you think listeners should view this agreement and what to think about and work towards moving forward with it?
Well, I think despite what would one expect with this administration, some real progress has been made between the U.S. and Mexico on some of the key changes progressives have demanded for decades. But we also know that the enforceability of the new labor standards are lacking, and that has got to be resolved, or the package is not potentially acceptable. The gains that have been made, and if the labor standards get to be enforceable, then will need to be weighed against whatever is revealed when the final text comes out, could be poison pill provisions. Mm. However, I guess my advice would be, despite what our, again, well-founded instincts would be to assume anything that comes out of this administration, we should fight to the death over. It may be the perverse jiu-jitsu moment where actually some things that progressives have sought for a long time could actually be delivered. And the standard for reviewing this agreement is a different one than, say, progressives have for the TPP, which is to say this is an agreement that's in effect, that for 25 years has been in effect doing damage. It has already resulted in just under a million U.S. jobs being certified just under one narrow program, so it's an undercount, as lost to NAFTA. And more jobs are being outsourced every single week. So just recently, Boeing, Verizon, I mean, these are high-wage, high-tech jobs that are going. And we see every single week workers in Mexico being denied their basic labor rights, being fired if they strike against crap wages that were imposed on them in a contract never voted on. And we see every week more of these investor attacks in these corporate tribunals. So the standard I will judge the final deal on, and I, you know, I urge other people to reserve their judgment until they see what the final is. How I'm going to judge it is, does it stop this ongoing damage? With TPP, the question was, you're going to get a brand new agreement. Do we like what it says? With NAFTA, the question is, you've got a very damaging agreement in place. And does the new proposed agreement stop some of that damage, stop all of that damage? Or is it just more of the same or make it worse? Mm-hmm. But the standard is different because we don't have a blank slate. The position of opposition to this deal means either the status quo, which we know is bad, or, you know, unknown. So the question is this measure potentially going to stop some of the ongoing damage? And okay, I think we need to wait and see.
Okay. Thank you so much. It's Lori Wallach, Director and Founder of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. Laura Carlson, Director of America's Program of the Center for International Policy. You know, this negotiations over NAFTA are, of course, happening at the same time as a fight over immigration. So will the changes in NAFTA make it so that, you know, this free flow of corporate rights, the free flow of corporations, the free flow of capital, you know, continues on its merry way while people are still stuck and constrained into countries where they are being forced to reside and not allowed to move? How is the discussion over immigration happening in Mexico? And is there a relationship between who's talking about NAFTA renegotiation and immigration policy?
it's worse than even just the relationship that we've always known between free trade and forced migration, because Donald Trump mentioned in his press conference that there was some kind of an agreement that may or may not be formal of Mexico helping us with the border. What that means is that there's always been a rumor that within these NAFTA negotiations, the Mexican government was going to agree to be the migration filter on its own southern border to keep Central Americans in desperate situations, many of them with refugee status, from coming to the United States, including the Safe Third Country Agreement, which would actually make it obligatory for them to ask for refuge in Mexico instead of in the United States. So if that's part of this agreement, that's really bad news for refugees, for human rights, and for Mexico as well. Overall, I would agree with a Scotiabank analysis, which basically says this is a slightly modified deal with a cosmetic change to its name, probably, that allows the White House to sell the revised pact as a significant departure from its predecessor. And then, of course, as Lori says, there's just so much we don't know about the agreement itself. There still has to be Canada brought into it. It's unlikely that they can push it through Congress as a new bilateral. A bilateral would be a terrible deal for Mexico. It breaks the original concept of forming a North American bloc and just goes to the old concept of the United States throwing its weight around through bilateral agreements with weaker countries. But the overall problem for Mexico is that this is the neoliberal model that Andrés Manuel López Obrador said he was going to fight. And there's a number of changes that have to do with redistribution of wealth and a greater role of the state in development here in Mexico that could clash directly with NAFTA.
Mm. Okay. Well, unfortunately, we have to stop. I really appreciate you being on with us, Laura Carlson, Director of the Americas Program of the Center for International Policy. So much more to talk about on this subject. Thank you for joining us for the discussion of NAFTA.
Thank you.